Kate Mallory massacre, in which her mother has just been murdered. Kate brings the child to the U.S., seeking to shield Sophia from a lie about her origins. 12 years later, that lie is blown apart by a stunning revelation, and the novel's young embarks on a perilous journey to discover her hidden history. In the course of that journey, mother and daughter must find a way to confront the truth about each other and themselves, and foundation. In addition to The Center of the World, Jacqueline Sheehan is the author of 3 are part of a mystery series about a sleuth and her dog Cooper, historical novel about. You can go to writersvoice.net to hear our interviews with Sheehan about the. Now, aside from your first novel about Sojourner Truth, a kind of one in a long time that isn't a mystery story with a dog at its center.
It's true.
And it centers around a tragic time in the history that ran from X. And yeah. What's been called the genocide of the mind. Jacqueline Sheehan, The Center of the World, about this time.
You know, I studied Mala in 2006, and it was a pretty pivotal time for me. I had just lost my mother to Hurricane Katrina victims with the Red Cross. It's sort of a compounding of losses and traumas, and I sort of emerged at Lake Atitlan in Guatemala and learned about these Mayan people. And there's no way that you can romanticize it, but they had been really brutalized by the military for a very long time, as you said. And yet they are the most enduring people, you know, and the scars from the genocide were still there, you know, and the crushing poverty. Alcoholism had swept through. There was domestic abuse. And yet, I could tell that these people were, and they were going to do it with, and that they had a lot to teach us. And then I began to imagine, well, what would it have been like to be on the scene, say, in 1990? A bit atrocities. But, you know, to be a sort of a scientist scene setting on one of the massacres. I had many, many to pick from, but one in particular that did happen on Lake Atitlan. Most of the massacres of the Mayan villages happened in the highlands of northern Guatemala. I began to imagine
And you are, of course, referring to one of your two protagonists. That is Kate Malloy, water scientist Kate Malloy, who comes to Guatemala in 1990 to do research on water quality. Tell us about her. We'll talk more about the other protagonist, her adopted daughter, Sophia.
Kate is a doctoral student studying water, you know, one of the most studied things on our planet soon. But what is most ways is that when she was 15, her mother cancer very quickly, and it sort of knocked her legs out from chasing her here, and it is something that she will ultimately have in common with this young Mayan girl mother.
And so now to book opens, you actually open it when Sophia is old. And she's in Massachusetts. Her stepfather, Martin, has just died in a terrible message for his daughter. What's that message?
Martin reaches out from the grave, so to speak, to leave this message for his step-adopted daughter, Kate's adopted daughter. And the message is, Sophia has believed all of this time that she's always known she was in Mexico, and Kate brought her up to Massachusetts, and she has lived fairly contentedly ever since. The message is, Sophia, you are not from Mexico. You are from Guatemala country. Your documents of adoption may not be legal, and your mother operated at great risk to bring you here, but she made me promise never to tell you this for reasons that she will have to disclose to you. Opens sort of this shocking affront to Sophia, who's a young high school sophomore soccer star young woman.
Yeah, and she reacts pretty badly to this message.
I think she reacted so feeling that, you know, there is something else. There is someone else. You really do have people elsewhere. And it is very shocking also for her to learn that has lied betrayal, that her mother would lie about this very essential thing, really, Sophia's genesis. Where do you come from? Who are you?
Tell us how Kate did adopt Sophia, or at least how
Sophia... So in the book, there is a particular group of Mayans who are there to protest the jailing of their village men. And this is sort of unheard of at that time, that they would protest. They did. And I think the military were taken sort of aback by this. They were quite shocked that the village people sort of come and say, you know, you have unjustly jailed these two individuals, and we want them out. And for whatever reason, something goes, and Joan Malloy is present. She's a witness to this horrible massacre, and she scoops up this massacre, and it happens to be this little, only 2 years old. And she realizes that she is a witness. Essentially, the little child is a witness, and that she has got to get her out of there. And that is what she does.
Now, she had known this child beforehand because she knew the mother, Manuela. And I'm the relationship between Kella. Could you talk a little bit about that and, you know, the cultural differences?
The cultural differences are a 24-hour thing that you have to negotiate. And I would have to say that in most places that I've both, you know, the indigenous people and people who are visiting and traveling, everyone is doing it. Everyone is struggling with this kind of negotiation. With Manuela, they become friends. Kate is teaching Manuela English to increase Manuela's viability. There are three languages that they must negotiate. There is English, there is Spanish, and there is Quechical, which is the native Mayan language that Manuela speaks. So Manuela's first language is not Spanish. Kate's first language is not Spanish. Rocky ground with Spanish. And then they're trying to learn English. But they struggle through it, and they become friends. They're trying very hard to become friends.
Now, after the massacre, Kate takes Sophia, and one of the things she struggles with is that she knows, because she has known something about this culture and she has become friends with Manuela, she knows how key it is, that sense of place, the sense of homeland, the place where the ancestors are. Talk a little bit about Mayan culture and how that entered into how you wrote this aspect of the book.
One culture, and I feel so much better for it as a human being, really, is their emphasis on ancestors. Usually every year when I meet with some of the local shamans, and one of the first meetings I had was the shaman's encouragement to a reminder for me to grave. And I said, what? And he said, well, don't you do that all the time? He said, "You, of course you visit your father's grave, don't you, and light a candle and have ceremony and sit and visit with him." And I said, totally appalled. And then he realized that for most North Americans, we are ancestors. And he said, if you do not acknowledge your ancestors, they will take a bite out of your soul, mm-hmm. which is a line that I used in the book. So there is that sense of ancestral a presence that is every day with the Mayan people, every single day, every impulse, the presence of ancestors and a gratefulness to the ancestors for this life that people. And Kate develops throughout this book, and she struggles that she will be ripping this child, if she takes her away from the culture entirely, she will be ripping her away from something very, very essential And yet the consequences, if she does not, in the midst of this war zone, are...
You're listening to Writer's Voice, and I'm Francesca Rhiannon. I'm talking with novelist Jacqueline Sheehan about her new book. It's about an adopted daughter born during Guatemala's brutal... when she finds out about her true origin. Talk a little bit more about this concept of the ancestors taking a bite out of your soul. I mean, it sounds like it's, you know, in vengeance, but I think it really gets to a very human truth.
I think it does, too. So taking a bite out of your soul, I kind of connect that with someone nipping at your heels, that phrase, to remind you of something. That, you know, you're not here, that there are ancestors upon ancestors upon ancestors who have made this life possible for us, and that the act of acknowledging that is very, very, you know, that we have this moment of viability for our lifetime, and then we become ancestors. And there's been a spiraling continuation that I believe the Mayans live with every day, that we can forget here that in fact is the truth.
And I think of how we really take a bite out. We don't act in awareness of the generations that will succeed us.
Wow, that is really true, isn't it? That is so true, and the climate change talks are going on as we speak at this very moment, and consequences for our actions in this moment, but our children and our grandchildren and the children that follow.
So this whole, in your new novel, The Center of the World, these kinds of relationships, the whole idea of relationship between family members, between friends, between those we are responsible for, is it?
It is at the heart of this. And in the center of the world, that is how the Mayans, Titlan, which is just sort of almost incomprehensible lake, they call it the of the world. And the other center of the world really is moment-to-moment relationship that the person we encounter, you know, world as well.
Now, the book's action moves between 1990 and then 12 years later. Going back to 1990, Kate meets a Peace Corps worker. This also is a story within the story of relationships and the contamination of relationships. Talk about him as much as you can. Tell us about him.
Will is really one of from people when they tell me that I write good men, which I enjoy. Understanding my male characters. And Will is an idealistic person. My daughter was in the Peace Corps, and my son-in-law was in the Peace Corps. One of my sisters was in the Peace Corps. So I have an understanding of what draws people into the Peace Corps. And then sometimes realities that burst their bubble once they are in the Peace Corps. And that is what happened with Will's definitely taken advantage of by forces that he really can't quite grapple with. It's a very unusual linguistic ability. He's able to learn languages. So it is his great gift that is taken.
What was the role of the U.S. government in the massacres and the civil war in Guatemala? In brief.
It's the in brief part that's hard. The U.S. really meddled in sort of ways in Central America, really without the American people knowing about it. The CIA had a presence in Central America since the early 50s, and it was, I think, two things: to protect American interests, mainly United Fruit, and keeping communists in Central America for fear that they would just come, you know, dashing through the Mexican borders into the United States, I suppose. We were tumbling governments left and right. We tumbled a democratically elected government in the 50s, and we were supplying arms. So our role was disruption after we abandoned our role in Guatemala to the great extent, a militaristic government that has never really righted itself, and a crippled country, really.
You've actually written a book that covers a lot of political issues, and they do center around the theme. It was about relationship, respectful relationships, and not. Am I wrong?
I hope you're not wrong. Kate, speak for those of us who are not national politics, because so few of us are. And yet when we go to another country, that's what we experience. Mm-hmm. We experience the day-to-day trickled politically in a country, such as a massacre.
And this is really a terrific, barely touched the surface, actually. It talks about adoptions, the scenes of escape from the site of the massacre with Sophia are just really stunning. You said up in the beginning that, you know, this kind of, what are some of the biggest challenges for you in writing this book?
One of the biggest challenges was, this is always the case with writing a book, it's wanting to get it right. Writer or artist, you have this picture of how it should be, but it's the getting it there that is always the hardest part. And then with the publishing world, you know, writers bit that American readers will not respond to a book that is set in another. I'm choosing not to believe that that is true. But again and again, writers are told that. We're told that by agents, not my. Please don't set this book. You know, there is that fear of, oh my, is America that xenophobic that if the book is partially set in another country, we won't read it? I think that was one of the hesitancies that I did have.
I don't think that means quite the opposite. Thank you so much for sending me this book to read and to give me the opportunity to interview about it for our listeners.
Oh, you are so welcome, Francesca. I always love working with you.
Thank you. Is The Center of the World. Read an excerpt at writersvoice.net. Sheehan is also the author of four previous novels, of which three are part of a mystery series about a sleuth and her dog, Cooper. You can find a link to an Cooper at writersvoice.net. You can also hear some of our other interviews with Sheehan about her previous books. That's it this week for Writer's Voice. Go to writersvoice.net to list plus find out more about our guests or read book excerpts. You can also sign up to get the newsletter. And follow us on Twitter at Writer's Voice, all one word. Then check out my blog, Francesca Rhiannon at blogspot.com. You can find lots of cool stuff there. The Writer's Voice webmaster is Bill Way Rhiannon.
And now for the KBOO News at noon for Thursday, January 14th, 2015. 259 service workers sided with the union. On December 29th, after a majority of workers, service contractor Huntley USA International Union, SEIU Local Union, will allow the service to better their working conditions. The Huntley workers perform a variety of service tasks at the airport, including helping handling bags at curbside check-ins and expediting movement of passengers through security lines. The workers currently earn minimum wage. The compromise plan for raising Oregon's minimum wage. Her plan would set two rates in metro area. At the rest of the state's wage would be $13.50. But this would be the governor's plan. The increases would be period, which would rise to tide the Portland area. The wage would be $11.79. Under the governor's compromise, the full increase would be and the increases would be indexed. The Palestinian BDS boycott divest Methodists this week. The United Methodist Church named five of the largest Israeli banks off-limits for its benefits fund. The Palestinian BDS National Committee praised the decision. The International Fellowship of Jews and Christians condemned the action, claiming that God honors churches that support Israel and that God decreases the membership of churches that do not support Israel. Despite harsh criticism by pro-Israeli or church is consistent with a number of U.S. church bodies, such as the United Church USA, who are divesting funds from the Israeli occupation of Palestine. and this summer. This issue will likely be on reported killed, as well as five of the seven attackers who had grenades, homemade bombs, and handguns. That's all for the KBOO News at noon for Thursday, January 14th.